Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. In this corner, a man who knows what it is to buy his comics off a spinning rack, weighing in at a comfortable weight for his age, it's Uncle George. And in this corner, relative young pup, newbie level graphic novel binge reader, weighing in at none of your f***ing business, it's Epic Boss McFall. Let's get ready for Panel by Panel.
So welcome to Panel by Panel, the comic book show that talks about the storylines of days gone by. We, meaning myself and Uncle George here, we talk about the episodes and the story arcs that have mattered in the Marvel Universe, that have changed the way Marvel has formed over the decades. I began reading in the mid-90s. Uncle George began reading sometime before that. And we're here to share our experiences with you.
Sometime around the early 70s, if I recall.
Yes. I am Charles. As you hear, that's Uncle George.
Hello, everybody.
You picked out this particular, it's not necessarily even a story arc. You and many other comic geeks have heralded this one particular author as changing the game for Marvel, and in particular, Thor. And who is that?
That is Walt Simonson.
And why is he such a game changer?
When he has a unique style as that was quite different from most of the typical comic art that you'd see. So he was quickly became a fan favorite, especially after his work on a DC series called Manhunter, not to be confused with Martian Manhunter.
Right.
This was an assassin, if I recall, who belonged to a secret cabal. And it just took the comic fans by storm. It won several awards at the time. And after that, he had gone to several series at Marvel, and mostly those were just art jobs. But having been a Thor fan back from the Stan Lee, Jack Kirby days, he eventually wanted to come up with his magnum opus for Thor that he'd been working on since he was a fan.
Nice.
Formulating it in his head, actually doing storylines for his own entertainment, and a lot of those concepts that he came up with in that story eventually came up in this in his run on Thor.
So he, as any good artist is, was a fan first, and then brought that love of the character, and had a huge run in the 60s. I went onto the app that I use, which is Marvel Unlimited, and just searched by... Now, is he an artist or author? Because I know I'll get yelled at if I don't get that correct.
Primarily an artist, but on his run of Thor, he was the writer and artist for about 2 or 3 years, and then he switched to just the writing duties.
You said duty. So I looked up Walter Simonson, and... starting in 1963 at issue, I don't remember exactly, like 234 or 334. It has something to do with numbers somewhere in there.
The issue that he took over was 337.
I was actually close. And just for the new listeners, I am not the fact-finding guy. I tend to, as you see, make things up as I go, because it's all about the experience on my end. So I like the experience things. But I'm glad that we have somebody who rides with me who actually knows things, and that's why George is the heralded expert on the show.
As much as I can be.
So he took over at 237. And
published in 1983.
I thought there was a much earlier run with him back in the 60s.
No, in the 60s was when he was a fan.
So what research I have done, apparently I did not remember correctly. I don't have my tablet in front of me.
His first professional work was in the 70s. And
maybe I'm thinking 73.
That could be.
Maybe.
Which is about the time that the Manhunter series was published.
So, I did read the first issue they took on Thor, and it was, if I'm reading the right one, it was... somehow Thor and the Warriors 3 and Sif ended up out in outer space hunting down Odin. And he had been kidnapped or taken off or something along those lines. And they end up finding him on this planet that's protected by like some weird force field. Is this sounding familiar? Am I in the right neighborhood here?
That may be a little earlier or a little later than the run I just reread.
All right. So let's go over to the run you just reread.
Okay. The run that I read is 337 to 348, so the first year of Walt Simonson's run. And his most significant contribution was the introduction of Beta Ray Bill.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and Beta Ray Bill was the sole survivor of a kind of a bionic enhancement process that his species put him through in order to protect them, as their entire solar system and galaxy possibly were being destroyed by Surtur and his demons. The entire population was put into cryogenic sleep, loaded on a fleet of spaceships, and Beta Ray Bill was its protector. Eventually, they approached Earth, so Nick Fury of S.H.I.E.L.D. contacted Thor to ask him to investigate.
And this is the white Nick Fury.
Yes. Yeah, not the Sam Jackson version. So Thor found the fleet and immediately was attacked by Bill, who thought Thor was another of the demons that had been pursuing them for months or years, ever since they left their home. At one point, the hammer is knocked from Thor's hand. And this is after they have crashed on Earth. So the enchantment that used to be in Thor's hammer was this: if Thor is separated from the hammer for 60 seconds, he will revert to Don Blake. So that's what happened during the fight. And Bill picked up the hammer, which amazed everybody, the readers, the characters in the story.
So let's talk about that for a second. As you're reading this as a young adult, somewhere in there, and this is the first time this concept has ever come across your experience.
Right.
What do you remember really just about that moment?
Yeah, being younger and less jaded than I am today, I thought, I saw Bill pick up the hammer and, whoa, no way. Because, you know, for 20 years, the only person that could pick up Thor's hammer besides Odin and select Asgardians was Thor.
Did the inscription read the same for the entire time of Thor, that he who is worthy can wield the power of the mighty Mjolnir?
Yeah, that is literally written in stone.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that wasn't like retconned or changed to go back and fix some things, because ever since I've been aware of Thor, I've been aware of that inscription on the hammer.
Yeah, that inscription was first seen in the very first appearance of Thor. Okay, let me see if I can remember this. Journey into Mystery 84, I think, either 83 or 84. And so that's been part of the Marvel Thor lore ever since the first appearance.
So good. So that plays in, obviously, here, mm-hmm. is finally somebody came around who apparently is worthy, lifted the hammer, and shockwaves that still resonate today went through the Marvel Universe.
Right. Yeah, that's one of the things that a clever writer can come up with is, what if? So what if there's somebody besides Thor who's worthy to wield the hammer? And so he had developed the idea of Beta Ray Bill over the years, who was originally called Beta Ray Jones.
I wonder why that would be.
Walt Simonson wanted an everyman kind of name for him. So sure. Something a little bit cosmic. So there's the Beta Ray part, and right. Then very mundane. That's the Bill part, which he replaced the Jones part with.
Well, I thought he might have been going with Indiana Jones, which originally came out in the early 80s.
Yeah, that was about that time. But he decided to go with Bill because there were, in his view, too many Jones in the comics already.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. That's I'm sure that's something that was happening at the time, but Beta Ray Bill flows off the tongue a lot easier. There's a word for it in speaking that I cannot think of right now, but it hits the points that make you want to say it. And I got to say, I was introduced to Beta Ray Bill first, in my own experience, through one of the many cartoons that Marvel puts out. Mm-hmm. And to see him wield the hammer, and then they kind of ham-fistedly explained it. And it was a 30-minute cartoon, which, you know, really is about 22 minutes. And so they really crammed in this whole big story arc into 22 minutes for kids. Yeah. So, but that was my, I was blown away. I was like, somebody who's worthy. That's resonates with me, that being worthy part. And that was really cool.
Yeah, it was. It kind of mind blowing at the time. Generated a lot of excitement amongst fans because it's one of the first times that Marvel put somebody else into one of their iconic superhero positions, so to speak. So you haven't had Venom, the anti-Spider-Man, show up. Captain America wasn't quite into his various identities, or didn't have very many of his replacements to show up and that kind of thing. So it was kind of revolutionary at the time.
So Beta Ray Bill gets the hammer. Thor has reverted back to Doc Blake. Then what is going on?
Because things are afoot in Asgard, Odin calls back Thor at that time, but he's focusing on the hammer. So when he brings Thor back, it's actually Beta Ray Bill he brings back. And they go, what's going on here?
What? Did we dial the wrong number?
So now Bill thinks he's in the realm of demons, and he goes a little nuts.
And here's the other question about Beta Ray Bill. Does the hammer automatically imbue you with the awesome armor and the cape?
It does.
He's wearing the exact same armor and cape as Thor.
Pretty much the same, but modernized. Walt Simonson did a lot of stylization on it that brought it up to the 80s.
Well, he did a lot of stylization on a lot of things.
He did. Eventually, things get straightened out, and Bill realizes that these are potential allies in his battle against the demons. And, of course, since Surtur is an enemy of Asgard, the Asgardians join in to fight for Bill and for Asgard.
And as we know, that turned out quite well. And then he ended up with his own hammer.
Yes, he did.
Which was, I believe it's called Stormbringer.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a cheat on Walt Simonson's part, where Odin forces Thor and Bill to fight, quote, to the death. Of course, they're not going to kill the real Thor.
Right.
At least not at that time. And so it eventually ends up in almost a draw. Bill knocks Thor unconscious, refuses to slay him, and takes him back to Asgard. So Odin comes up with the solution. Okay, we'll give you your own hammer.
And the dwarves forged it, and the rest is somewhat history.
Right.
It's a really cool aspect of it. Now, what do you say? What do you think? How much of that plays into what's going on in the semi-current world, in the modern day? We'll say in the modern day Thor, where Thor is being relaunched. And I haven't read any of it, so I may get some of the details incorrect. But Thor's being relaunched as a woman. Mm-hmm. Is it a separate one? I don't even know if it's actually Thor relaunched as a woman, or if it's a woman who also was worthy. But how much do you think Walter played into that going on in the modern day comics?
Well, I know a lot of writers, there's a spectrum of how they approach things. Some of them try to stay very close to what's been established. Others want to wipe the slate clean and just...
Which is typically called a reboot.
Right. And with this Marvel now, which I have not gotten into at all yet.
Yeah, me either.
I don't know what exactly is going on with the Marvel Universe, what flows from the universe that I'm familiar with, if it's more of the same history or if they're going to a new alternate history. I'm not too sure.
I think with what Walter did from a lot of the early comics that I read and through George's encouragement that, you know, I bring in the Runaways from the 90s, and he's like, yeah, let's talk about real author. He didn't say that. He didn't say that way at all. But, you know, all these great storylines play into each other, and the great artists and authors inspire other great artists and authors. And we read through the Phoenix Saga, and I can see this is how things are done kind of overview of that comic of, oh, this is the style, this is what the fans want, this is how we do it. It definitely felt like Walt came in and said, I'm a fan, I know what I want, and it's totally different than the formula that you have out there. And I can't imagine how he pitched that in a meeting to, yeah, they're fans, but they also are running a business. They have a business to run. So business people who go, I know this formula works, don't mess with what's not broken. How do you pitch, hey, not only am I going to bring in a brand new alien race, he's going to look like a horse face mixed with a camel, and he's going to take Thor's powers. How awesome is that? You know, and then the fans, like you were saying, it just blew you away. It didn't seem like there's any anger. It didn't seem like there's any outrage. It seems like everybody's like, wow, this is a brave new world. This is amazing. And quite possibly he cracked open the as the Guardians of the Galaxy would say, he cracked open the fissures in the universe and let just so many ideas loose with that.
Yeah, that's here's what happened is at that time, Thor was a fair seller. I rarely read the books because I thought they were on the boring side. It was pretty stagnant.
It's a little hard to get past the these and thous sometimes.
I think by that time, the faux Shakespearean that Stan Lee originated and Roy Thomas carried on, I think had faded a little bit. The writers were less inclined to use those. Yeah, the stories that preceded Walt Simonson's run, they were pretty dull. They were formulaic. The editorship knew that it needed a shot in the arm. So when the time was right and Walt Simonson came up and gave his proposal, I believe they jumped on it and sales shot up immediately with the first issue that he worked on.
Very cool. So I went on after I read, apparently I read a different run of his. I need to go back and double check. The first one I read had to do with Odin having been taken by this race of aliens who get their power from gods. Like literally they power their planet by trapping a god and sapping its power. Thor and the Warriors 3 and Sif got in this. They turned the Starjammer into a Norse ark, if you will. So they're all exposed to space, but they're not exposed to space. And it's still the Starjammer, but it's not the Starjammer. And there's this whole story arc with that about how Odin died, but he implanted his essence into Volstagg, which actually sounds dirtier than it was. And then, you know, so it's this whole he died, but he didn't die. It was interesting. And it was not the run that you read. But as I finished that run, I went to the stuff from the 80s that Simonson did, and this one miniseries blew me away because it sounds cool, but it's still 1980. It's a four-issue run. That's all it was. It's a four-issue run. Mm-hmm. It's about the Soviet Russia and nuclear radiation, which I know growing up in the 80s, I know was a big fear of everybody's. You know, Chernobyl went down. Cold War was going on, and it was I can't remember the title of it. It's Havoc and Wolverine.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a four-issue run. And Meltdown, I think is what it's called. Meltdown 1 through 4.
I love it.
And I got to tell you, man, the art was really, for what I was expecting of the time, the art was really weird. It was, to me, more modern, like in the new century modern, than what I expected from the 80s. Today, if he did that same kind of art, I think it would be called like Nouveau Modern or something. Noir. It's almost like the dime novel graphic novels, noir novels of detectives. Actually, not DC comics, but actual detective stuff. Nothing was ever in focus, ever. Everything was just slightly out of focus the whole time. And it just really, I was like, that is, I should hate this. I should be like mad that you're making my vision blurry, but I love what he did there. Do you remember, did you read through that one? Have you read through that at all?
Yeah, I did read that. That was, it was like you said, it was Meltdown. It was written by Walt Simonson and his wife, Louise Simonson.
And okay, I wasn't sure if she was married to him or not.
Illustrated by John J. Muth, who was a classically trained painter.
Okay. So, that makes sense.
So there, that's where a lot of the uniqueness of the artwork comes in, is he didn't learn how to draw from comics, but classic paintings.
The story, though, it, to me, is still very, I guess it's timeless, as it were. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's centered around Soviet Russia, the USSR, and it's centered around spies and Chernobyl meltdown and different things like that. Mm-hmm. But it really is a story of Wolverine and Havoc and how they're making their way through this small adventure, because they were on vacation, I think, in Mexico or somewhere. Right. I couldn't quite tell where they're on vacation together. But it was really almost Quentin Tarantino-esque. Just the story kept taking lefts and rights. And what is the girl's name? It's not Phasar. It's Quantum.
Polaris.
Polaris. Is it Polaris?
The Havoc's wife?
No, the spy girl in Meltdown. No, it was like, it was something, it wasn't Polaris, but it was something along those lines, like Quantum or something. I thought they were going to have her be a brainwashed Black Widow, or the actual Black Widow, the way it was playing out, and it did not turn out that way. When they called her by name, I was like, oh, I don't really know that character. But it was a very back and forth. Did you ever see the movie The Game with Michael Douglas and Sean Penn?
I have it on my shelf ready to watch. I just haven't gotten to it yet.
Okay. Well, it's kind of similar, but kind of not, but you never knew exactly what was going to go on. And even the characters in the story didn't know exactly what was going on. And that's what gripped me about Meltdown. So Walt Simonson, is very, very, very interesting. After Meltdown, I jumped to one more, and that had to do with a very, very, very short run of the Hulk. Mm-hmm. I thought, hey, that's cool. It was 2010, I think it was, and it was in the new century, and it was okay. But the Meltdown and the earlier works of Simonson absolutely were mind blowing, and I believe they changed the game for all of us. You know, I was really, other than the name, I was not aware of him too much before this mm-hmm. episode of this show, but right. I can see after reading it what it's done for me in my reading.
He was definitely one of the innovators of the late 70s and the 80s. Highly recommended to go to, for instance, the Wikipedia page for Walt Simonson, check out his bibliography, and just pick a couple things at random. I think most readers would not be disappointed.
I agree. And, you know, I used the Marvel Unlimited app on my tablet. I think it's well worth it. I think if I mention it enough, maybe they'll sponsor the show. I don't know.
You're always hoping.
There is always hoping. But you honestly, nothing beats getting your hands on a physical anthology. Because it won't necessarily be a story arc or anything like that. At this point, because he's one of the heroes of Marvel, I think it'd be like the Walt Simonson and I can't even speak anymore. Anthology, which would be well worth reading. Absolutely.
Yeah, and actually the ones that I just reread were a part of a trade paperback. It was a part of a series where they focused on visionaries for Marvel, the creators that had really become fan favorites in recent years. So it was Thor Visionaries, Walt Simonson. And it covers the first year of his run.
Nice. Very, very nice.
I don't know if it's still in print anymore, but it's worth checking out. The library might have it. Go on eBay. Somebody's bound to be selling
it. There you go. I was like, yeah, you can find it. Whether you have the money to purchase it is a whole other thing when you find it. But you can probably find it out there. I want to say a big thanks to producer and editor of the show, Mike Woodard, for doing the voiceover work, the intro. And he produces and edits this show for us. So thank you, Mike. You can find him at, you know, I'll fill that one in later. I want to give the right address. You can find this show and many others over at thehelicarrier.com. You can look under the tab panel by panel for this show. And, of course, enjoy all the other great shows over the Helicarrier Network. I'm on Facebook. You can find me at facebook.com/House of the Bear. And you can find George wherever he decides to show up, because you, sir, tend to stay off the grid a little bit, don't you?
Yeah, well, as far as the helicarrier goes, I'm an undercover agent, so I can always climb aboard.
There you go. All right, tune in next time. We're going to talk about War of Kings, and that's epic. So that might be a couple different episodes. Thanks for listening.